All right, good morning. Looks like we're all ready to go. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. It is December 8th, 2020. I am Judge Louise Bjorkman. I am joined today by Judges Matthew Johnson and Michelle Larkin. And the next matter on our calendar for oral argument is In Re the petition of Wendy Nevins. While we are proceeding by Zoom rather than in person, the same rules apply to our oral arguments. You will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. You will see the time displayed in the screen in gallery view. Counsel for appellant, you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal should you choose to use it. And my final instruction would be to please state your name and identify the party you represent when you begin your argument. And do let me know by raising your hand or otherwise if you lose audio connection for whatever reason. All right, with that, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors. Robert Hajek representing Robert Nevins this morning. This is not a complicated case. The facts are not in dispute. Parties were married in 1996. The marriage was dissolved in 2003 in Colorado. During the time of the marriage, the respondent received from her parents an interest in real estate. That was done in 1999. That real estate interest was recorded on a torrent certificate where my client was indicated as a spouse having an interest in the marital interest in the property. Parties were divorced. At the time of the divorce, the stipulated divorce decree stated that any undisclosed property, real property, that they would be deemed, this is what the decree says, such property is deemed to be owned by husband and wife as tenants in common. Therefore, my client had an interest in that property as a tenant in common. That interest was, again, memorialized on the certificate. What we're not dealing with...
Counsel, yeah. It seems to me you omit a critical part of that provision in the agreement, namely that they are to hold the property as tenants in common until such times as the parties can divide such property by agreement or otherwise. Isn't this property action or otherwise?
No, it's not up to the examiner of titles in Hennepin County to act as a family court judge in Colorado to determine what a marital interest is or is not. The only position of the title examiner is to determine whether or not my client has an interest in this property. The parties were, the court had jurisdiction in Colorado, personal jurisdiction over both of these parties. They made a decision that any undisclosed real estate would be listed as tenants in common. There is no agreement to divide that property. So then the question is, what does the otherwise mean? In this case, it's not up to the examiner of titles in Minneapolis to determine what a family court judge would do in Colorado to determine the interest in the property.
So Mr. Hajek, is it your preference to be in a Colorado court, and have you made any efforts to put this dispute there?
Yeah, if you take a look at the this was extensively argued before the title examiner. The problem is the Colorado courts no longer will entertain this dispute because it is long past. I mean, they're the time to be able to reopen this decree and make any determination as to what will happen with this property is long past. So what will happen is if this court determines that the title examiner was wrong, that my client does have a tenant in common interest in this property, as was stated clearly in the Colorado decree, then it'll be a partition action in Hennepin County because that's where the property is. That's where the respondent is. It's no different than any other partition action among tenants in common.
Well, okay. That's your ultimate goal is to obtain a portion of that property? Portion of the parcel to subdivide it?
Well, yeah. The property has been sold. The proceeds were placed into a trust account at the realtor's office. And it was being held pending the outcome of, I don't know if the money's been dispersed or not at this point, but yes, the issue is what is my client's tenant in common interest? That's not before the court today. That's a separate partition action, which we'll have to follow if the court overrules the examiner. But what we're asking for today is just the recognition of what the Colorado court said. My client has a tenant in common interest to this real estate in Hennepin County, and how that interest will be determined is for another day.
But wasn't this action about how that interest would be determined?
No.
I mean, what's the functional difference between this action to issue a new certificate of title or whatever the precise versus the partition action? What if the issues of the dissolution judgment, the stipulation, paragraph 30, and the law about what a non-marital versus a marital interest is in gifted property. I mean, weren't all those issues teed up in this action?
Absolutely not. The title examiner has no business in determining whether property is marital or non-marital. That's not the function of the title examiner. The title examiner is kind of an odd creature in the sense that all it does is determine whether or not existence of title, whether or not there's somebody has an interest in property, period. That interest in property, what it is to be determined is not up to the title examiner to determine what that interest is. All the title examiner is doing is reviewing to determine whether or not the title to this property is in fact a tenant in common interest, my client or not. If it's a tenant in common interest, then the title examiner's job is done. Then the tenant in common interest is a district court action to determine, you know, as any other tenant in common. It's a sale and partition or any type of determination of a partition action, which will be determined in a district court case. So, but that's way outside the purview of the title examiner. She can't, in this case, have determined what my client's monetary interest was in that property. That's way outside her scope. So, and I don't think under the facts of this case, the title examiner could come up with any other explanation other than my client's tenant in common interest, which was clearly defined as real estate in Colorado, that he has a tenant in common interest. At that point in time, her role is done. It's finished. The parties now are tenants in common. How that tenant in common interest is going to be divided, it's not the title examiner's role.
Mr. Hajek, doesn't that conclusion depend upon a determination that there was property that was undisclosed?
Well, it is undisclosed. No, it's undisputed. I mean, the parties agree. Whether it was undisclosed intentionally or unintentionally, it's not the point here. There's no question that the property was undisclosed. That's stipulated fact. So if it's undisclosed, then by the Colorado decree, which the court had jurisdiction over both parties, my client has a tenant in common interest to the property. I don't understand why that simple fact isn't being confirmed here and acknowledged by the title examiner.
Well, let me just bear down on the evidence on that. I believe your client executed an affidavit saying he was completely unaware of the property. Is that true?
That's absolutely true, yes.
And I believe Ms. Nevins executed an affidavit saying that she told him about it during the marriage.
I don't know if that's true, yes. I don't see that that's relevant to the determination here in any way. Because it's undisclosed in the judgment decree in Colorado. She knew that she had an interest in this property. It's her parents gave it to her. Whether it was disclosed or undisclosed, whether she tried to hide it or she forgot about it, I don't know. I don't care because the property, the judgment decree, the stipulated judgment decree said any undisclosed real property that they own as tenants in common. That's it. I mean, there's no further discussion about it in my mind.
Well, let's discuss your client's responses or lack thereof to the request for admissions, because they seem to be significant to me that your client admitted that no portion of the property when it was conveyed by the respondent's parents to she and her two siblings, that no portion of the property was conveyed to your client. You also admit, or your client also admitted, that under Minnesota law, the property is non-marital property. Seems to me those are pretty significant admissions.
Irrelevant, totally irrelevant for two reasons. Number one, we're not dealing with Minnesota law here. They didn't ask under Colorado law, okay, whether Minnesota law, there's no jurisdiction in Minnesota. Minnesota had no personal jurisdiction over these parties when the divorce occurred. So the question of what Minnesota law is irrelevant.
Jurisdiction over the property and the action had to do with title to the property. Are you saying that this case should never have been in Minnesota at all?
No, the property's in Minnesota. The divorce is in, or let me put it this way. What happens if the Colorado court had said that my client had an interest in that real property as a tenant in common? Okay, what would the courts in Minnesota do? The courts in Minnesota, not the courts, excuse me, what would the Torrens officer do in Minnesota? The Torrens officer would have to say that he has an interest in the property. That's it. Well, the problem is we're confusing this odd Torrens process with a district court divorce process. That's not the issue of the title examiner. Okay, the courts in Colorado declared that my client had a tenant in common interest to that real estate because it was undisclosed. There's no issue about that. That's factually admitted that the property was not disclosed. Therefore, it becomes a tenant in common interest to my client.
until there is agreement between the parties or some, whatever that other language, I mean, or otherwise. I mean, are you arguing that forever they are common tenants in common?
No. Yes and no. I mean, it's just a partition action. There's any other tenant in common. If Mike, again, you're confusing the Torrens process with the district court process. All the Torrens examiner's role is to determine whether or not my client has an interest in that property. Yes or no. If he has an interest in that property, then that's it. It's not up to her to determine what that interest is or how it's going to be divided. It's up to the parties then to move forward with it. And the otherwise I would submit in this case would be a partition action. That would be the otherwise. At such time as the property is divided by agreement, which maybe there's an agreement. If you will determine that the title examiner was wrong, maybe there's an agreement. Or the otherwise is a partition action, as any other tenant in common would determine a partition action. I mean, this is not complex. The problem is you're confusing the Torrens process with the district court process and a divorce process. It's not the Torrens examiner's role to deal with divorce issues, period.
Well, okay, so Mr. Hajek, I mean, this matter was initially filed in the district court. The district court referred it to the Office of Examiner of Titles, right? And then the deputy examiner did an analysis of legal issues. I'm looking at page 8 of the addendum, and that's where the deputy examiner is discussing paragraph 30 of the separation agreement. I mean, would you agree that that analysis that the district court did, that the deputy examiner did, which was adopted by the district court, I mean, that issue was put in the lap of the deputy examiner, and it was proper for her to do that analysis. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely not. The analysis is whether or not he's got a tenant in common interest or not.
But doesn't that require his interest as a tenant in common derives from paragraph 30, right?
Yes, of course.
And so doesn't the district court have to look at that paragraph of the separation agreement, which was incorporated to the court order, and determine whether the predicates are met? And I understand your argument that the examiner misanalyzed it, but it seems to me that I don't understand why you would argue that it seems like you're saying the examiner had no business even doing that analysis.
Here's the examiner's role, to be clear. Okay. First of all, these Torrens actions, they always start in district court. The district court in Hennepin County always refers it to the examiner, and the district court usually always adopts the examiner's recommendation. There was no point that we were able to argue to the district court whether the examiner did or didn't do the job. It was just adopted. Okay. So here's what the examiner's role is. The examiner takes the Torrens certificate. The Torrens certificate says, Robert Nevins has an interest in the property. Okay. Now, what is that interest? The interest is a tenant in common interest by virtue of the judgment decree adopted in Colorado as a tenant in common, and the property has not been divided by agreement or otherwise. Therefore, we affirm that he has an interest in the property. That's it. That's the only role that the Torrens examiner has. She went way beyond her analysis in determining what marital interest is, non-marital interest. She can't act as a family court judge in Minnesota or Colorado.
My understanding is that the pre-existing certificate of title reflects the conveyance done by the Nevins parents, and that it vested a remainder interest in the three Nevins children, but not in their spouses. They were identified with reference to spouses, but it seems to me that the pre-existing title recognizes 1/3. In fact, I think it even says 1/3 interest. And so the remedy that you're asking for in this action is a new certificate that would include Robert as having an ownership interest by dint of paragraph 30 of the separation agreement. Am I accurate in all of that?
Absolutely true. And I go further than that to say this. He has an interest in this property, which is a marital interest under Minnesota law because he's a spouse. Okay, that interest, whether you extinguish that interest or not, that interest under Minnesota law as a marital interest as a spouse then was superseded by his interest as a tenant in common in accordance with the Colorado divorce decree, which provided that any real property, which was undisclosed, he has a tenant in common interest. Again, all it's up to the title examiner to do is determine whether he has an interest in the property. that
yeah, it's, would you agree with me? Looking at page 8 of the addendum, if you have it in front of you. That's where the deputy examiner discusses paragraph 30. I believe that is, in your view, the crux of the matter. I think that's the part of the memorandum that you believe is in error.
I agree. Anything beyond her saying that there's a tenant in common interest by the Colorado divorce decree is irrelevant and should not be her purview. She can't sit her job is not as a family court judge either in Colorado. And my client does have an interest in this property by Colorado. It's not a non-marital interest. If you look at the law we submitted before her as to what the interest in Colorado would be, he has an interest in this property, a monetary interest in this property under Colorado law. I mean, it's a monetized interest under Colorado law. It's not like it's all her. It has to do with whether or not the property increased in value from the time of the award or a time of the non-marital property became hers or not. So it's not just it's marital, non-marital. There's a blending, a transmutation of this non-marital because of Colorado law into some marital property that he owns. So,
okay, Mr. Hajek, you've exceeded your time and you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
All right, thank you.
Yep. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I turn to my prepared argument, I want to just respond to a couple of comments by Mr. Hajek. The examiner of titles and anybody who examines title, whether they're an examiner of titles in a torrent system or at a title company or in a law firm, they're frequently having to determine interest in property, including liens, easements, joint tenancy, tenancy in common, marital interests. It's every day. That's something that title examiners have to deal with, whether they're the referees of the torrent system or working at a title company or in a law firm. There's also two title standards that deal with that their title standard 84 and 92 deal with real property in divorce, whether it's included in a decree or not included in a decree. I'm trying to read my writing here. Okay, there's no need to partition because there's no interest for there to be partition. There's no tenancy in common interest for Robert, the appellant, because it's all on the certificate of title, and the certificate of title is conclusive as to the status of the title under Minnesota statute section 508.36.
So then why did the examiner of title go off onto what's marital and non-marital under Minnesota law and Colorado law if, as you suggest, it was clear from the original certificate of title that the interests were conveyed simply to the three children?
Your Honor, some of what the examiner of title said was just dicta. I don't know that it's, you know, that it was specifically litigated in this case. For example, the claim that Robert Nevins has a personal property interest in the real property. She looked at the title. She looked at what's on the certificate of title. That's what you're supposed to do. And there was an argument raised by Robert Nevins that somehow the Colorado decree had some relevance. And so the examiner of titles, I think, pretty thoroughly debunked that. And if you look at this.
And so, Mr. Dunleavy, again, I'm calling attention to page 8 of the addendum. That's where the deputy examiner discusses paragraph 30. In your view, was it proper for the deputy examiner to address that issue about whether paragraph 30 gives him a property interest?
I think that they were making the argument that it does, and she's basically saying, no, it doesn't.
So it was proper for her to consider that issue?
Yes, I think it was.
Okay, thanks.
The personal
property. So what was your client's interest in this real property? Do you agree it was undisclosed?
I don't know that, Your Honor. I mean, there's a affidavit from Wendy Nevins. It's in the court file. She said she disclosed it. So there's a fact issue about that.
I guess she says that I think that she told him about it during the marriage. Am I accurate in recalling that?
Yes, Your Honor.
I mean, is that disclosure in the sense in which it's used in the separation agreement?
Well, I mean, it's not in the separation agreement. There's no doubt about that. But she claims that she disclosed it during the marriage.
But I mean, wouldn't we have to, I mean, I assume that the separation agreement, both parties had counsel, it was negotiated. I assume that there were some disclosures made either pursuant to court rules or voluntarily. I mean, I'm assuming that when the separation agreement talks about disclosure, it's talking about disclosures in the course of that dissolution action or the contemplation of a dissolution action. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Your Honor. The property is clearly non-marital, both under Minnesota law and Colorado, because it was gifted to Wendy Nevins by her parents. I think the examiner of titles recognizes that. There was no lien created, though, and there was no, but in favor of Mr. Nevins, there was no lien created, and there was no interest in the real property created by the separation agreement. The petition subsequent, okay, so Wendy Nevins requested a deed from her ex-husband roughly 17 years after the divorce, and he wouldn't give her a deed. So she had to proceed otherwise with the petition subsequent, and that's what this is. And I think that falls within the language of the divorce decree.
So Mr. Dunleavy, we're here, up here, I guess, on a ruling on cross motions for summary judgment. And so it seems one possible outcome with cross motions is that both are denied and the matter must go to trial. Based on your prior statement about factual issues surrounding disclosure, is that one of the conceivable outcomes here, is that this court reverses and remands for a trial on that issue about disclosure?
I don't think it's a relevant issue. I think the examiner of titles looked at it and didn't really care, because the Colorado court does not have jurisdiction over Minnesota real estate. That's very clear. But this court did.
Okay, but now I feel like you're contradicting one of your prior answers, because I was asking you whether it was proper for the deputy examiner to analyze paragraph 30.
Yes.
And I thought you said that was proper.
Yes, I think it was proper, but it's whether or not Wendy Nevins disclosed the property during the divorce or during the marriage, I don't think it changes the effect. The law is still the same. And the Colorado court had no jurisdiction. The Minnesota court did. And the certificate of title is conclusive evidence of all matters that's stated in it. It doesn't say he's got a marital interest. It doesn't say he's a tenant in common, and it doesn't say he has a personal property interest. It only discloses the fact that Wendy Nevins was married at the time when the certificate of title was issued. Then it's up to whoever's examining the title to look at whether he had a marital interest. And when they were divorced, any marital interest claim that he could have had was eliminated.
Mr. Dunleavy, does the judgment here under appeal preclude Mr. Nevins from seeking to recover some portion of the value, the appreciated value of this property? I think it went up substantially in value between the time of the original gift in 2000 and when 2019, when the two siblings wanted to convey it to the third sibling. I'm looking at page 8 of the district court or the examiner of titles record, and the examiner suggests that in fact there may be an opportunity for a monetary recovery, but it would be an item of personal property rather than an interest in the real estate. Am I wrong about that, or how would that work?
Under the Searles case, which is cited in my brief, Mr. Nevins is long past the statute of limitations for any personal property claim. And so, yeah, the examiner of titles raised it as a possibility, but did not look at whether there was a statute of limitation.
So by failing to disclose by your client's failure to disclose property, and by it not, you know, being revealed until 17 years later, then he's effectively lost an opportunity to to recover his interest in the property that he would have gotten if it had been disclosed in the Colorado action?
Actually, Your Honor, he would not have had any interest in a property, whether it was disclosed or not, because it's clearly non-marital property in Minnesota and Colorado.
Well, the real property is non-marital, but isn't it true under Colorado law that he had a marital interest in the appreciation in value, which was personal property?
That may be true, Your Honor, but there's a reason for statutes of limitation.
But if the facts have been concealed by the party with knowledge of those facts, you think that's conclusive?
Your Honor, I can't say that she concealed it. I think it's she said she disclosed it during the marriage. Whether they forgot about it when they got divorced, that's another thing. I don't think it matters because he has no interest in his property. Whether it's personal property or real property, has no interest. I'd like to address another thing that Mr. Hajek said during his argument. He said that the examiner of titles, the district court judge refers a matter to the examiner of titles, and then the examiner of titles has a hearing and issues a ruling. And then it goes back to the district court for approval. And it's true that they very frequently approve the examiner's report, but there is a procedure which is called proceeding notwithstanding the report of the examiner. So basically there is an appeal from the examiner of titles to the district court. And apparently Mr. Nevins didn't do that.
Well, the district court adopted the deputy examiner's report, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor, because there was no appeal. It was just directly approved by the district court.
Okay, is this a matter that you briefed?
No, he just mentioned it today. It wasn't in his brief either.
What's the citation? What's the legal authority about that?
I'll have to find the site, but I know it's possible, Your Honor, because I've done it before. I got completely slaughtered when I did it, but it's possible to do it. And I don't have that site off the top of my head, but I can look for it in Chapter 508.
Well, just looking at the timing, I see the title examiner's order is issued June 3rd, 2020, and the district court approved it the next day. So it's hard for me to think that there was an appeal process that could have been taken.
I believe there is, Your Honor. I know I've done it before, and I'll try to find a site for you. Maybe Mr. Hajek can do his 5 minutes, and then during that time, I can look for it.
Is it point 321 or point?
Oh, I was going to say, I don't know that we want to take up your argument time looking for citations. We will have the ability to look for the law as well.
Okay. So, I think that's probably correct, but I'm not absolutely sure. Oh, that's the registrar. The registrar of titles is the clerk that accepts documents. So there's an appeal from that to the examiner of titles.
I have no further questions for Respondents' Counsel.
Okay, I don't have any more argument, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Then Mr. Hajek, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you. Let me first point out that this issue, whether it's a fact issue, what one party knew or didn't disclose to the other, is irrelevant. If you look at paragraph 30 of the Colorado decree, it says, in the event that there is any real property which has been acquired by husband or wife during the marriage, and this is the catchphrase, and which has not been provided for herein. Okay, so if it's not in the four corners of the document, it doesn't matter what the intent of the parties were or weren't, whether they knew or didn't know. It's there's no issue, fact issue, that that property in Minnesota was not provided for within the terms of the judgment and decree. And here's the issue, I guess, the fallacy to the examiner's position. She tries to transmute what is real property into monetary property to say that there may be a monetary recovery here. But the monetary recovery is only as a result of his interest in real property. So it's kind of the chicken or the egg. If he has no interest in real property, then he has no monetary interest at all to recover. So she's saying, well, he may have an interest in this, but as counsel says, but the interest is now no longer collectible. Well, that's not why you have an interest in real estate. You have an interest in real estate because you're a tenant in common. That tenant in common interest never expires. It continues in infinitum, even if he was to die, that tenant in common interest continues. And that's where the examiner made the mistake here by saying that somehow this was transmitted into a personal property issue. And her statement of saying that negates what counsel's argument was, that he has no interest in this property under Colorado law, because he clearly does. He has an interest in any appreciation that occurred of this property under Colorado law, which according to counsel, that interest will never be recovered now because he claims the statute of limitations has passed. So again, I don't view this as a complicated case. All I view it as, the court had jurisdiction of the parties in Colorado. The property was not disclosed. Their tenant in common interest. His interest was memorialized in a certificate in Minnesota. The examiner then has to look at the Colorado decree and said, was the property provided for herein? No. Was it real property under the Colorado decree? Yes. Then they're tenant in common until it can be divided. And that's the issue. If you look at the language, the tenant in common interest continues, quote, until such time as the parties can divide such property by agreement or otherwise. But there's been no division of the property by agreement or otherwise. And that's my point. There's no agreement, and the otherwise is a partition action. So all the examiner needs to do is say he has an interest in this property, period. What that interest is to be determined by a partition action. So that's all I have. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period. Thank you both for your arguments. And we will recess in preparation for the next oral argument beginning at 11:10.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justices.